Good evening, everybody, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for coming and joining us tonight. I'm Simcha Feuerman. I'm Director of Operations at Ohel. And as you may know, tonight's evening is sponsored by Ohel, Marty Schenkman, and Congregation Bnei Yeshurun. I want to talk just for 2 minutes about Ohel in Teaneck, our Behavioral and Health and Family Center on Palisade Avenue. So to talk to you just for 2 minutes about it, and also why we're doing what we're doing tonight and why we think it's so important. The Ohel Behavioral Health and Family Center, which is on Palisade Avenue, 696 Palisade Avenue in Teaneck, it's an outpatient mental health center. We have counseling for individuals and families. We have a youth leadership training program. And very recently, a new service that we started is a geriatric care management service, because as many of you who are in the room and many of us in the world are experiencing the pressures and the difficulties of being available and helping our parents as they go through different difficulties, or loved ones. You can be a caregiver and not have an elderly parent. There's all kinds of caregivers. The best caregiving line I ever heard was from a client that said, it was a woman who recently gave birth to a baby, and she said that, "I never imagined I'd be getting up in the middle of the night to take care of my father-in-law." But in fact, she was getting up in the middle of the night to take care of her father-in-law and not to take care of her baby, who was mercifully easy to take care of, not like all babies. But anyway, this just gives you, this tells you how important this topic is. And we're here to get chizuk from Rabbi Prasansky and to get guidance and advice from Marty Schenkman. And what you should know is, in our audience, is our care manager, Dvorah Sinensky, who works at Ohel, at our center over there, and there are brochures, and there's information in the back and in your package, that if you have any questions or needs or concerns, she is here, and Ohel is here, to be of assistance to you. So, you didn't come to hear me talk that much more. It's our pleasure to hear from Rabbi Prasansky.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Feuerman. I want to welcome everyone. Thank Dvorah Sinensky for her efforts, and Ohel for putting the evening together. A little change of plan, since the screen is up here already. I'll speak about estate and financial planning, and Marty can get to the Kibbutz Avayim issues. Why not? Right. Had I known you'd come with a PowerPoint presentation, I would have done the same, but I'm challenged in that area. So Gemara in Kiddushin, Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, and I want to discuss in a general sense the obligation that we have specifically in honoring elderly parents, especially when it becomes challenging. So Gemara says what on the surface strikes us as a very harsh statement. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Ashrei mi shelo chama'on. Fortunate is the person who's never seen his parents. And Rabbi Yochanan, the Gemara explains, ki ivrato imo meisoviv. His father died when his mother was pregnant with him. Yiladatu meiso imo. His mother died in childbirth, so he never saw his parents. V'chein Abaye, the great Amora Abaye, was the same way. Never saw his parents. Same thing happened. So the same statement, and Rashi explains, it's because the obligations of honoring parents is so difficult, and it's so subject to stumbling, and worse, that better not to be in that situation. Rashi says, "Mishe'efshar lekayem kvodom kechol atzorach." It's impossible to fulfill the mitzvah of honoring parents as is required. Vunena shalayim, so a person will be punished because of it. So it's an exceedingly difficult mitzvah. I concede, of course, parenting involves much more than that, and the benefits of having parents are known to all of us. But the mitzvah is a difficult one. Difficult for children, young children, difficult for adolescents, and difficult in different ways when parents age and the children themselves are middle age, sometimes even a little past that. I refer to no one in specific here. With ever-expanding life expectancy, though, the sandwich generation has emerged, as Rabbi Feuerman referred to, and people who, in a sense, have just concluded their own child rearing now enter a stage in their own lives in which they effectively have to parent their parents. And it's becoming more difficult. People are being kept alive longer. Their lives are not always healthier as they age. They're not always as productive, nor are they as self-sufficient. So even though traditionally Jews always cared for their parents and elderly directly, hands-on, that's also changed. It's changed for a number of reasons. Obviously, the family always lived near each other for centuries until really the late 19th century. Most people never ventured more than 20 miles from their birthplace during their entire lives. So now it's different. And as a result, there are special challenges to Kibbutz Af HaEim given the longevity to which we are now accustomed. And in some cases, I saw a statistic, hundreds of thousands of new cases every year of Alzheimer's. It just robs people slowly of their mental and physical capacities, their memory, their history, their personality, their pasts, and really their future. So I want to discuss two areas in brief that are very important to this particular topic. First, the type and expense of care in ordinary situations. And then secondly, the special needs when a parent suffers from dementia or senility or some other malady in which they become a shell of themselves, sometimes abusive, but often incapable of caring for themselves. So what then is the obligation of Kibbutz Af HaEim? How is it carried out? Let's take the first case first. Who pays for Kibbutz Af HaEim? Well, what is Kibbutz Af HaEim? It's this week's Sedra. Kabed es avicha v'esimecha. Should honor your mother and your father. L'man ya'arichun yamecha. Al ha'adama asher Hashem alakecha nasein lo. So that you will benefit from longevity on the earth that God has given you. So we honor our parents. As you know, Chazal say, it's not just inspiring words, Kabed es avicha v'imecha, v'esimecha, but there's a halachic injunction attached to it. What does it mean to honor? In another context, in Parshas Kedoshim, the Torah says, Ishimo v'aviv tiro'u. You have to revere, to fear your parents. So the Gemara Kiddushin, Daf Lamed Aleph from Beis, asks, Eizehu mora ve'eizehu kibud. What's considered showing reverence for parents? And what's considered showing honor to parents? So mora, reverence, lo mei bimkomo, lo yoshev bimkomo. You don't stand in your parents' place. You don't sit in their seat. You don't contradict them. V'lo machriya, you don't decide things for them. If it's talking in a halachic context, if he's involved in a halachic discussion, you don't paskin in front of him. That's not really our topic tonight, but this is, what's Kibbutz Af HaEim? What does it mean to honor parents? So the Gemara says, Ma'achilu mashkeh, malbishu mechaseh. To honor one's parents means to provide for their physical needs. Give them food, give them drink, give them clothing, give them shelter. Machnisu motzi, bring them in, take them out. Escort them when necessary. That's the obligation, to provide for a parent's physical needs. But then the question becomes, Michel me, who pays for it? Is it the parent's obligation to pay, primarily? Is it the child's obligation to pay, primarily? Let's say it is the parent's obligation. What if they don't have money to pay? Then is it the child's obligation? Which children pay for it? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Michel Ben, it's the child's obligation, it's his mitzvah, therefore he pays for it. But in fact, that's not halacha. And the Gemara continues, Rav Nosson Bar Ashaya said it's Michel Ov, and this is how it was taught. O Rule Rabban Lerav Yirmiyah, Kimanda Omar Michel Ov. Really, it's the parent's obligation to pay for the parent's support, meaning the child physically has to tend to those needs, or at least see to it that someone else does, but in terms of who's financing it, it's the parent's obligation to finance it. So the Gemara says, Mesavei, it's a contradictory statement. Here we said, Kabeda Savicha Vesimecha. And in Mishlei it says, Kabedef Hashem mehonecha, you have to honor God mehonecha from your wealth. So malahalan b'chisaron kis, afkan b'chisaron kis. Just like we would think that honoring God with your wealth means your money, so to honoring your parents, same word kabed is used, should mean your money as well. So the Gemara says, no, if it's li amar mishel av, may nafile mine. If in fact you're honoring your parents with his money or her money, mother, father, then what's the honecho? What's the your wealth that's being expended? And the Gemara says, l'gitul melacha. It means that a child does not necessarily have to spend money from his own pocket in order to sustain his parents. But bitul melacha means, as we all know, there are certain times when you have to give up work in order to tend to a parent's needs. And if you have to give up work, you could lose income. But nonetheless, that becomes your obligation. That is mei honecha. So honoring means to tend to a parent's physical needs, and that's the halacha is brought down in Shulchan Aruch and Reish Mem Sivhei, Zeh Shemachilo Mashkeu Mishal Avaim. The fact that you have to provide for them food and drink, that's their money, you may have to take their money and go buy the stuff and feed it to them. Nonetheless, that's your obligation. What if the parents don't have? They don't have enough money. If the father has, but the son doesn't, kofin oso v'zonovit kefi mashu yachol. The Machaber says that we force the son to support the parents. But if the son doesn't have, eino chay v'chazer ala psachim ulahachil es oviv, the son need not go beg door to door to support his parents. Notice the Machaber said, if the parent does not have and the child does, the child has to support the parent. The Ramah disagrees. And the Ramah says, v'yishomrim, and he quotes a host of Rishonim who stated this originally, the child does not have to support the parent directly, except in the sense of whatever he'd be obligated to give midin tzedakah out of charity, so that he's obligated. You can even say his father, his mother is the preferred tzedakah. He's giving a tzedakah anyway, it's a better tzedakah to give to the parent. Nonetheless, the Ramah continues, if he has sufficient wherewithal, a curse can come upon a person who supports his parents from his tzedakah money, meaning other aniyim will suffer because he's using it on his family. It's better just to give it of his own free and willing heart. And the Ramah continues, if there are many children, they have to split the costs of the parents' upkeep. If some are wealthy, some are poor, michuyavim ha'ashirim levad, then only the wealthy have to pay. Sounds like the American government. Only the wealthy have to pay, and the poor children are left out. Now, the Aruch HaShulchan summarizes this in Reish Mem as well, and he really speaks to something I think that we recognize intuitively and became the common custom amongst Jews. Nir alanias daiti ladina shemichuyev lazona kafiyas yagas yaga. Aruch HaShulchan says, I guess he wrote a little over a century ago, that the child will be obligated to support the parent to the extent that he can afford it. And that's the common minhag. We don't change that minhag. And ideally, you should not use tzedakah money for this, but the child's obligation to support his parent is a natural one. And of course, it comes midin hakar satov. The parent brought him into this world and raised him and nurtured him. So obviously, from a moral perspective, it's the least he could do. So just to work backwards again, the essential obligation is on the parent to support himself. And the child has to see to it that the parent's needs are cared for from the parent's money. But if the parent does not have sufficient means to support himself or herself, then it becomes an obligation on the child, and preferably not from tzedakah money. So the parent pays unless he or she can't, and then as we know today, it's not just the child, but often under certain circumstances, the government will pay, the insurance companies will pay, there are some means of payment. Secondly, the type of care. What is the child's obligation towards a parent? And now we come to a very sensitive question that every family has to wrestle with if a parent lives a sufficiently long life. And that is the ideal of home care versus institutional care. And it's a very, very sensitive, very vexing issue. I tell you at the outset, there's no one right answer. And the conclusion depends on factors that will vary for each family and for each person. Sometimes it's a source of tremendous tension in a family. If children have sworn, or the parents have made them swear, never to put them in a nursing home or assisted living facility. But then over time, circumstances make it very difficult to provide for private care. There's a lot of guilt involved. There's a need to balance care for the parents versus care for your own children, your own family, your own spouse, which can be very, very trying in any individual case. And it wasn't always like this. I mean, it was always a vexing decision, but again, life expectancy has changed, and therefore the situations just are confronted much more frequently. I look back only to my own family's situation. None of my grandparents, Aleihem HaShalom, were ever placed in an institutional environment. Two simply died, one died relatively young, one died a little older, late 70s, but just he was at home, and it just never came to that. They died pretty suddenly also. My older grandparents both died in the late 80s, but again, my grandfather in Israel died at home, and then my grandmother lived alone for a few years, and she also died suddenly. So dying suddenly, actually, is a bit of a relief from a lot of these issues, not that we look forward to it. In my wife's family, it's almost a similar thing, that the parents, her grandparents, lived with her parents for a number of years. One grandmother died very young also. They lived with a number of years. And with my father, Aleihem HaShalom, the last few months, he was terminally ill, so he split time in the homes of his children, and that worked out well. It was 4 or 5 months. Had it been 4 or 5 years, I don't know if the dynamic would have been the same. But it's a very, very difficult decision. And I don't presume to paskin which way is better or which way is worse, because there are just too many factors in every case. What's the upside of an institution? Well, very often the care is regular, it's routine, sometimes it's better. A person can be together with peers, can find greater companionship than in a home where he might be alone an entire day. There's instant medical help if it's necessary. For sure, children's lives or the instant family's life is not impacted as much. And certainly in the cases of even partial dementia, there is more danger in a home, less in an institution, that the parent will just walk outside and disappear. I was driving on Route 17 the other day, and I saw a silver alert. It's the third or fourth time I've seen such a thing. So Amber Alert is a child. Silver Alert means a senior citizen has disappeared. They left the home that they're living in, and then they've just either walked off or took a car, but they don't have the capacity to find their way back to where they're living. That's less likely in an institution, much more likely if it's going to happen in a home. The downside is that even the finest institutions, I have to say that just in terms of the quality, we're blessed that the two kosher institutions in our community that cater to our needs, the Jewish Home at Rockley and Care One on Teaneck Road, they find beautiful facilities, very well maintained, but the best facility is never going to be as loving as a home, and the care is never as hands-on. And in a home, a person is surrounded by family. The older person feels more part of the family, and the older person can contribute daily to the lives of children and grandchildren in a way that's not possible in an institution. Something I've heard from older people, it sounds a little crass and maybe harsh, but I just say for what it's worth, and don't take every word seriously, but I've heard from older people, they look at an institution as a place to which they go to die. Whereas a home is a place where they stay to live, and it's different. The end result is the same. But the feeling that they have with being integrally involved in a family is not the same. The bottom line is it all depends. Some of it depends on what the parent-child relationship was like before they aged, how they feel about living in a child's home. Very often the parent doesn't want that. They don't want to encroach. They don't want to interfere. And vice versa. Expense, I'll leave that to Marty, it can be calculated both ways. Institutions can be expensive. To be at home with an aide can also be expensive. And sometimes, as I've seen myself, people in homes, the children pay for private aides as well. You can be in a home and have an aide also, and then the expense increases. There's always an understandable bias that favors keeping the elderly with children always or for as long as possible. As long as possible introduces the next topic, and that is, Rahmanul Islam, the difficult parent. What happens when the parent's capacity starts to deteriorate and they can no longer care for themselves, even with AIDS, and they can no longer function in a normal sense? And this is a very, very trying matter. Both parents and children become very frustrated inherently, and because we all want our parents to remain young and vibrant, and it pains us to see them grow old and feeble. And I should add, psychologically it becomes difficult on a child, not just the parents, because the child just projects unconsciously that he'll be in that stage as well. Each generation that passes on, the next generation becomes that older generation. It becomes very difficult to witness a decline in front of our eyes. When it happens in a home, so as is well known, people develop a shorter fuse, and if anything, this leads to to much of the angry exchanges that causes so much guilt to children later on in their parents' lives. The good news is, none of this is new either. It's ancient. It's already addressed in the Talmud. Gemara says in Kiddushin Daf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, Ad Heichon Kibud Av V'Em. What's the extent of honoring mother and father? Kadeshi Tol Arniki V'Yizrken Eliyom B'Fanov V'Einu Machlimo. The Gemara mentions a case. This is the extent. If you would take your mother or father would take your wallet, your purse, your valuables, and just throw it in the sea, and you don't respond, you don't get angry. That's the extent of Kibud Av V'Em. Why does a parent take someone's wallet or purse or iPhone and throw it into the sea? For sin, because they become demented. Ki also Ravdimi Yomar, Ravdimi came and said, Pamachas Hayolovish Sirkon Shalzov, Vayoshev Ben Gedole Romi. Mentions a certain person, the Gemara is speaking about, a famous non-Jew named Dama Ben Nesino. Dama was a paragon of Kibud Av V'Em in his day. Once Ravdimi said, he came from Rome, he said, Dama was sitting amongst the notables of Rome wearing a gold embroidered silk cloak. Uvasa imo, and his mother came, ukratomi menu, and she tore it off him. Itafchol al rosho, and she smacked him in the head. The yarkalo b'fanav, then she spit right in front of him. Velohichlimo, he didn't say a word. He didn't embarrass her. He didn't shame her. He just accepted. Take another case, which is really on point and directly moves us into where we want to know the practical extent of Kibud Av V'Em. Rav Asi Havalei Ayima Zkena. Rav Asi, famous Rav Asi, buried in Tveria, right next to the Rambam. Rav Asi had a mother who was very elderly, and she was losing her mind. Amra Lei, she said to him, Bo'ina Tachshitin, I want jewelry. Avadla, he made her jewelry. Bo'ina Gavra, I want a husband. Nayanloch, he said, I'll look into finding a spouse for you. Then she said, Bo'ina Gavra de Shvir Kvasach, I want a husband that's as handsome as you are. Sounds like a compliment, but Shavka V'Ozal La'ara de Yisrael. Rav Asi left at that point, and he left Bava, went to live in Israel. Why did he leave? Because he realized that his mother's demands were getting more and more irrational, She was losing more and more of her mind, and therefore he could not deal with her. And rather than be in an environment where he'll provoke some type of enmity or cross-exchange, he left. The Rambam discusses this in Hilchos Mamre, Perek Vav, Halacha Yud. Misha nitra fadaita shel avigo shel ima. If a person's father or mother loses their mind, they become demented, senile. Mishtadel in hogi mahem kafidai tamachi yucham alehem. He should try to deal with them as much as possible until they have mercy on him, meaning that he could find some type of common ground. He could find some mode of relationship that's beneficial to both parties. The Em'iyaf Shalom Lamod Meshin Ishtatsu B'Yoser. But if he cannot stand before them anymore because he has just become too senile, Yani Chem V'Yelechlo, then he should leave. Rather get into a situation where there's anger and there are bitter words and recriminations. The Itzava Acher Manhigam Koroi Lohem, and he should command others to take care of them as is necessary. Now that, what the Rambam is talking about, is really the dynamic that we're facing in many cases. You take the advanced Alzheimer's patient that loses awareness of family slowly, of surroundings, of an ability to care for himself or herself. What the Rambam says, Yanichem v'yelechlo, he should leave and let them, he should go and hire someone else to take care of them. That's what we're talking about. Now the Ravid disagrees for the most part. The Ravid says, Ein zo hara'a nechona. It's not proper to tell a child to leave an elderly parent. But then he adds, Im hu yelech v'yaniach lo, l'mi yitzaveh l'shomro. If he would go, abandon the parents, he's going to care for the parents with the same dedication as the son, as the daughter. So in fact, we see, if we look into the words of the Ravid very carefully, if in fact you could find a situation where indeed someone can be retained in order to provide the level of care for a parent that's necessary, then even the Ravid would agree. The Rambam holds that it's better to avoid angry words and bitterness and resentment and guilt, to find someone else to care for a parent and not be a daily presence when the parents have become mentally or psychologically challenged. And even the Ravid would agree, if you find someone, if you could find someone else to watch the parent. Indeed, keep in mind that kibud av v'em is not a mitzvah begufo inherently. It is to say, it's not a mitzvah that you have to perform with your body, like tefillin. You have to put tefillin on your body. You can't hire someone to wear tefillin. But rather, it's a mitzvah that can be outsourced to others if it's not too difficult. Take a simple case. Your obligation of kibud av v'em, of machal, mishka, malbish, etc., that applies even if the parents are healthy and living on different coasts. Child still has an obligation to care for his parents' needs. If it becomes very difficult, then the child should outsource, the Rambam says, and outsource in a way that he knows the parents will be cared for. And the question always is, and this is really our lodestar, what brings the parent more dignity? Because that is the ultimate objective. They're not just they're human beings, not only parents, they're human beings also, and they deserve to be treated with this dignity. Now add to that the other trying situations that are corollaries of this, medical decisions. So the Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in Idrus Moshe that if a patient can't decide, if a patient's incapacitated and can't decide on his own care, then the children have the right to decide. Even Rav Moshe says that children have the right to refuse treatment if the treatment will not cure nor relieve any suffering. Even though it means the parent may die sooner, but there's no interest inherently in prolonging a painful life that will torment and can never be cured. And very interestingly, apropos of keeping a parent who is no longer fully capable in the home, the question was asked to the Tzitz Eliezer, to the Chelik Yud Beis Perek Nun Tes, Simon Nun Tes. Let's say a parent has to be restrained because they're in danger of harming themselves. So Tzitz Eliezer writes that a child cannot do that. That's a violation of Kibud Avim, akin to striking a parent. But someone else can, an aide can. So there you have a classic situation where the halacha would demand that a child desist from certain types of care for a parent and someone else intervene. Or, take not an uncommon example, the parent asks for something, food, drink, a cigarette, that the doctor says is harmful. Does a child have to comply? And the answer is no. There's no obligation on the child to provide a parent something that the doctor has said is harmful. This is cited by the Nishmas Avram. You find a number of sources, including the Aruch HaShulchan in Sif Mem Aleph in Siman Reish Mem. But again, each case has to be evaluated on its own. And I think it's critical to bring in rabbinic counseling. Kibud Avim is like any other mitzvah. If questions arise and guidance is needed, so that's what the Rabbanim are for. And Marty's going to speak in a few moments about Ohel's program. It's of course very important to bring in professionals. Someone in the field has the expertise. The average person, like the rest of us, really has no expertise. And we're often in a state of denial as well. We don't want to acknowledge that parents are aging, and therefore we're not always equipped to make the best decisions unilaterally. You know, it's not a new problem. Yeah, every time we say Slicha, say Shema Koleinu, we recite the Pasuk, Al Tashlichenu La'ez Zikno, Kichlos Kochenu Al Tazreinu. We ask Kadosh Baruch Hu not to abandon us. When we become elderly, when our strength withers, do not leave us be. We always need the assistance of God. And we need something else as well, a constant reminder of the gifts that the elderly provide us and that we provide them as well. They give us gifts, wisdom, love, understanding. They give us contact with our past, contact with our future. Great influence they could have, and again, as life expectancy increases, the number of individuals today who interact with grandchildren, great-grandchildren, there are a number of people in the shul of great-great-grandchildren. So to be able to be a small child and to think back to a great-great-grandparent, a great-grandparent, a grandparent, so it's astounding. It's rewarding. Many of you grew up, I mean, I remember even in when I was in elementary school, I was one of the few kids with four grandparents, because many of the children were, my classmates were children of survivors, and they had no concept of their grandparents. So Baruch Hashem, that era is a little distant now. And it's very common for grandparents, thank God, to live the long lives of the children that develop warm relationships with them. And we give gifts in return. Gratitude, eternal, everlasting gratitude for that they raised us, and love. And of course, the greatest gift we can ever give the elderly is time, our time. Time to sit, to talk, to express gratitude, to ask questions, to make them feel wanted and useful. And Jewish society has always been known for its exemplary care of the elderly. It's really the hallmark of Jewish life, especially religious Jewish life. The famous story that's made the rounds, I guess, 30, 40 years already, I've heard from a number of different sources. Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was returning from Eretz Yisrael, from one of the Yiddish Yisrael conventions. And he wound up sitting next to Yerucham Meshel, who at the time was the head of the Histadrut, a very well-known socialist leader in the 70s, I'm talking about. And they're sitting next to each other and talking, and every 10, 15, 20 minutes, a young man, a young woman comes up and asks Yaakov if he needs anything, and they fluff up his pillow, and they bring him a drink. And Meshel said to him, "Why do you merit this special treatment?" Yaakov said to him, "Those are my grandchildren. They're just coming to make sure I'm all right." And Meshel said, "Those are your grandchildren? My grandchildren don't even talk to me. They think I'm from a different century. There's no common language that we have." So if Yaakov had very quick wits, that's him. I'll tell you why. It's because you teach them that we're all descended from monkeys. Therefore, you're closer to the monkeys. You're a higher level of existence. But we teach our grandchildren that you're closer to Sinai. The older you are, the more closer you are to the revelation at Sinai. So therefore, they'll have more respect for us. We're linked to an age that they can only envy. That's one way we show appreciation for parents, for grandparents, for the elderly generally. And as Shlomo Melech said in Mishlei, Ateres Zekeinim B'nei Vanim, the crown of the elderly is their grandchildren. And Rashi says the elderly wear this crown when they see the grandchildren Hochem B'derech Tova. They're on a good way. They're walking on a good path. They relate to them. They follow in their footsteps. V'tiferes Bonim Avosam. And conversely, the glory of the children is their parents, to remember and acknowledge their righteousness, their goodness, the kindness they bestowed upon us in giving us life and more. And that, in fact, is the Torah way. I thank you all very much.